Haide musa mi fili. Poetry on the radio. Poetry in and around the ACT. Today, we speak with Melbourne-based poet Rose Lucas, plus the Rhyming Bugle, poetry news and events from around the region. For Art Sound FM, I'm Kimberly K. Williams. Rose Lucas is a Melbourne-based poet, critic, academic, and foundation editor at Liquid Amber Poetry Press, whose four collections include Increments of the Everyday, published by Puncher and Wattman 2022. Her first collection, Even in the Dark, from University of Western Australia Press in 2013, won the Mary Gilmore Award. Her third collection was The Shuttered Eye from Liquid Amber Press, 2021, which Lucy Dugan in Westerly Magazine described as, quote, a wise and companionable book fit for these strange times, end quote. Rose Lucas teaches in graduate research and supervises in creative writing at Victoria University in Melbourne. She is the co-author of Bridgings, Readings in Australian Women's Poetry, Oxford University Press, 1996, and has published widely in Women's Poetry, Feminism, Psychoanalysis, and Literary Theory, and Cinema Studies. I began by asking her to read her poem, Balancing. First, she describes what gave rise to the poem, with its images of anchored trees and tightrope walking.
I had some long service leave and was away and writing a lot, so it was a great and rich opportunity. And you know, I had a sort of discipline. I would write something every day. You know, as you tell the other people, this is a great idea, and I had the space to do that. And this was one of the poems that came up in that rich opportunity between busy times. And I remember when I wrote it, I thought, oh, hang on, I'm onto something here. Mm. And you know how you sort of kind of get a glimpse sometimes in your writing that, you know, there's a rich vein, you know, for me, I hope for other people, but certainly for me, that emerged in that poem. So, and I think I could look back, you know, and say retrospectively that, yeah, that has really started a strand in my poetry. So
that's really neat. It's almost like a point of inception. And because so much of poetry, I believe, is about impulse and even sometimes intuition.
Balancing. To build or find a necessary poise. Say a white-necked heron still against the mudflats, watching. This all begins a long way back. Consider this tree pose, its deep anchor, reaching branches, a human body holding deceptive simplicity. There is no last-minute cram or rearrangement that can produce this, that could trick the world or ourselves that we have roots in soil if we don't. Perhaps an early tug in the weave of the ordinary, the practice of scales on dusty afternoons, virtuosity unimaginable, an awkward conversation that finally says what needed to be said, an incidental act of kindness witnessed by no one, just love's humble generosity, its open palm. This quiet place, this resting, restless heart. Once, in another universe, Philippe Petit set out across the wire. The world seemed solid, and yet he launched into a fitful middle space, his body a machine for riding air and sky, for making friends with gravity, which let him walk, laughing as he danced, light foot from element to element, knowing the precious carriage of his weight, the even breath, the steady grip of muscle. As dangerous and as magnificent as that, this turning of ourselves with thought and craft and purpose, through time's aerial corridor, feet curled around earthen ropes, hands reaching for a transience of cloud. Philippe Petit, I'm sure we can all sort of see the images of him, you know, going from the one World Trade Center to another. It was indeed another era. But, you know, an amazing image, you know, that's always stayed with me, I think, that idea of how to be between. And his, that was a very physical being between, but of course we can be metaphorical about it.
No, of course. Yeah, well, that's what you can do too in poetry, right? You can be both literal or depicting things through the structure or metaphoric and all at the same time.
Yeah.
As you were reading that, I had this idea. So you know how they talk about the leap in poems, right? Mm-hmm. I think is this poem, one of the things I love about it is it takes several leaps, right? A lot of times a poem is set up and then it sort of takes one and you know, it feels good. But in this poem, we leap a lot. And you have to really set that up for the reader to be able to go with the poem, right? And so what interests me, though, is that leaping is about that in-between space, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And so
Your
poem is doing exactly what it's contemplating.
Talking about, well, that's great. That's great. I mean, I remember reading William Carlos Williams and sort of, you know, thinking about embodying, you know, the thing so that you're not just talking about it as an abstraction, but you are actually, you know, within the machine of the poem, you are in fact doing it, which of course is a, you know, if it works, if that happens and it works, it's a very effective way of conveying something. It sort of brings it, you know, in from the entirely abstract cerebral stuff, you know, here's an idea, can you wrap your mind around it? To here's an experience, can you come with me? You know, can you take that leap?
Oh, that is good.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite the same thing, but your comment there about the leap also, you know, reminds me of Virginia Woolf and the beginning of Mrs. Dalloway, you know, which is what a lark, what a plunge. You know, and that sense of, and of course it's dangerous taking a plunge, right? Mm. You know, it can come badly unstuck. It can be dangerous. But that sense of actually moving out from what is known and stable and finding one's way. And it's not just a anxious scarper from one safe spot to another safe spot. I mean, even if you think of Philippe Petit, he spent a lot of time in the middle of that space.
Yes.
People are looking up saying, oh my gosh, what are you doing? You're doing acrobatics. You're lying on the wire. You are being in that space. And, you know, in many ways, the poem allows us, or a poem, you know, that's working effectively, allows us to be in that middle space. Mm. And then hopefully brings us back into some kind of point of security and ability to close to some extent anyway.
But in some small way, even if it's just via the imagination, we return a little bit transformed.
Well, right? Yeah.
A little bit. And
that's right. You don't take a plunge and come back without, you know, being in some way different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that is something else I see a lot at work in your poetry, is the constant negotiation, I think, between the internal self, the voice of the poem or the speaker of the poem, and then what the poem is about. Oftentimes, you know, the external things, the heron in the mind, right? And it's that internal, external sort of figuring.
Yeah. Well, I think, I'm glad you raised that, Kimberly. I think that's really fundamental. And I think, again, for me, you know, I see a bit of a transition from, you know, thinking about experiencing poetry as you know, interior world, you know, observation of external world and that kind of, again, that exchange. I think increasingly I have felt that's probably a limited way of thinking about it. You know, I think I feel increasingly that, you know, the perception of self is the perception of world and the perception of world is the reflection of self. Mm. You know, so I think in my poetry as it progresses, I think I'm increasingly coming to a more sort of what you could call a sort of contemplative view, I think, you know, which is that it's not just me with all my specificities and histories and, you know, who I am. I'm not saying that's nothing, but there is, you know, once you start opening those gates to actually being in the world, you know, not just looking at it in an objectifying way, then I think it does transform a sense of self.
My co-host, Peter Searles, asked Rose Lucas about the poems she wrote during COVID lockdowns, included in her 2022 collection, Increments of the Everyday.
I really enjoyed the first section where you had poems about, obviously, because you're from Melbourne. You're
based in Melbourne. Lockdown capital.
And you were obviously in lockdown for a long time.
Yeah.
I think in that first part of this book, the poems that you have really have captured something of that time, all your observations of the details of what was going on. So I'd like to hear you read some of that. And maybe if that was your intention as well, like if you were writing at the time to think that you wanted to document what was happening, or you were just writing because that's what you do.
Oh, well, there's the $64 million question, isn't it? I mean, I think, yeah, I totally get what you're saying, that, you know, we were experiencing something extraordinary at that time. And yeah, you know, we are the kind of creatures who turn our lives into words, as Adrienne Rich once said, you know, so you're living it and you don't know where it's going to go. I mean, now we have a little bit more containability. Oh, yes, that was pre-COVID, that was COVID. Now we are kind of, they say, in post-COVID. So we sort of have a bit of perspective to look back. But I think, you know, when you're in the middle of something as extraordinary as that, you don't even know what it is. What is this thing? I was very fortunate in many ways. I wasn't ill. My family wasn't ill. We had a lovely house with a garden in which, in some ways, it was a kind of retreat. As I say that, I'm very conscious that for others, it was a much less positive experience. But, you know, I think in many senses, I also came to, I had what everyone had, which was that sense of anxiety and uncertainty, but also the sense of opportunity. And I think, you know, the opportunity was to reflect. And yeah, that's what I did. I mean, most of these poems actually from this first section of the book, which is called Hiatus Diary. So once again, there I am, you know, in the middle of something when you don't actually know, you know, exactly where it comes from and where it's going and how to define it. They come out of a collaborative project I did with visual artist Sharon Monigal. She and I had this kind of dialogue happening where she would take up some of my poems and paint to them, and I would take up some of her images and write to them. Of course, you know, the internet being what it is, we can just, you know, flick images and flick poems. We've subsequently had it as an exhibition, etc. But, you know, at the time it was a real conversation. So that was helpful to me too, that somebody else was using their art form to try and speak, you know, what we didn't really kind of have words for at the time. Yeah, now let me read this poem, Isolation Makes Me, which was a poem I did in response to an image of Sharon's, which was of a naked woman standing in front of the mirror, sort of thinking, you know, what's all this about and who am I in this context? Isolation makes me nervous at the edge. How will I be? Who will I be without you all? I am telegraphing these feelings to you, hoping they get through, safe in your own living rooms, waving across the street. Listen, something terrible is swirling under our closed windows. It's sticking to grocery bags, our unwashed hands, an array of patterned masks wait on the kitchen bench. And I'm stretched thin as linen that's worn at the knees to unpatched airiness. And when I look in the mirror, I am naked and afraid, and my heart is too exposed. If you look this way, you can see its precarious beating, its scarlet squeeze and push. Isolation makes me slow right down. So I'm thinking about you in front of your mirror, thinking about me and this weave that stitches us together. Even when we can't touch each other's paper skin, isolation opens me like a scalpel, like a deep dive into cold, tannin-dark water. Isolation makes me something different. Further, again, comes out of the isolation, on it goes. And I start with a quote from filmmaker Sarah Watt, who actually lived in my area. She's since died of cancer. And she says, "I love our house. It's probably a bit of a dump to some, or a castle to others. But for me, it's a light-filled container full of people I love." Which I thought was just a beautiful, beautiful sense of what home can be.
Mm-hmm.
Further, the sanctity of this marked-out space, this collective turning inwards, the quiet comfort of walls, angle of stair, our bed creaking as we turn, ripening of garden figs in afternoon light, or voices drifting down a corridor, while streaming away like photons dissolving in air, the further world still lies bemused and utterly beautiful beneath a creamy sun, its fields and stony rises, streets and verandas, all tipped skywards and slipping gently from summer's ferocious grip, waiting for us, as though through a frosted pane we had never really seen it before, rolling out its carpets of recurrent green, never stood amongst the low thrumming of unfolding seasons or travelled its wide and gusting territories of shift and hold and shift. Those two poems probably suggest those two strands, you know, the kind of the inward anxious looking, you know, what does it mean? And, you know, what's happened to communication and that, you know, side, which was very real. And also, the, you know, those possibilities, as I was saying, of, yes, you're stuck in your home, but it is also an opportunity to sort of be, you know, in that old religious sense of the retreat, I suppose, actually stepping out of a certain kind of hurly-burly to say, what is it that I find here in this, in the micro, in the space? That other poem, Balancing, in some ways, that was a different kind of retreat. You know, you take a long service leave, and we went to live in rural Vermont for 6 months, which was, you know, tough. But in that kind of opportunity to sort of be in a beautiful space and, again, to be removed from the regular things that tend to distract and absorb us. Not that they aren't good, you know, all the things that we do, but if you want to find a space to in which to reflect and see what is present, you know, in yourself, in your interaction with the world, I think sometimes you need to turn the volume down on the world.
I think the book explores some other sort of in-between spaces and times of reflection and times of pause in between life, including a recovery from an injury that you experienced?
Yeah, well, in some ways, I mean, this book is interesting because it's a response, you know, the various sections are responses to different kind of stimuli, you know, whether it's, oh my gosh, here we are in the middle of a pandemic, what is it, what are we going to do? And the second, you know, sequence is about a response to a loss of the death of a young friend of mine, almost a member of the family, really, and, you know, what you do in that kind of arresting situation. And then, yeah, the question, and then others of the poem are responding to various kinds of art and art, other people's art, if you like, as a provocation, if we stop and look at it closely. And then, yes, that final sequence, increments of the everyday. Yes, these things happen. I mean, you know, I was in my own home. I fell down the stairs. It was kind of the most unexpected. I didn't feel I was in a high risk environment. And yet, you know, something happened. And there's a series of consequences. It's interesting, of course, when I was right in the thick of that, there was no sitting up in you know, ICU and writing anything, I can tell you that. But it was probably in the few weeks after I was home, and again, it was another kind of space outside the ordinary where, you know, I was now in a recovery mode, not doing the other busy things of life, but, you know, trying to, you know, what does it mean for a body, you know, a person to recover? There are various kinds of physiological and also psychological things to grapple with in those circumstances. And, you know, once again, there I was kind of outside the normal, you know, run of things and having that opportunity. And suddenly, you know, you said before, you know, do we just write because, you know, we are these strange creatures who somehow are impelled to do so. It was really like that. It was really like, you know, quick, get me the notebook. You know, because suddenly these poems were kind of just coming up and really demanding to be worked with. And of course, you know, then you've got some very raw stuff and how to, you know, turn that into an external facing sequence that's going to speak to somebody else. You know, that's always a bit of a moment, you know, how much about this is great for me in a cathartic sense, and would it be, you know, a bit over the top or repetitive for somebody else. But nevertheless, I think, you know, once again, it was a good opportunity for me to reflect. I mean, I keep using that word, but I think, you know, that ability or the willingness to sort of say, what is it and how am I experiencing it and how can I communicate about it? You know, of course, that kind of physical experience, you know, it's a very mortality meeting moment, you know, where you think, gee, you know, through sheer accident, you know, suddenly this body that we tend to think, although I must say as we get older, we are more aware that this is an illusion, but we do tend to think it's just going to keep on going. And, you know, the notion that, well, it might not. And, you know, you can get patched up or maybe not. Well, you know, I was lucky I could get patched up. Yeah, but, I think it's actually quite a valuable perspective to have. Didn't love going through the pain and suffering bit of it. But, you know, I do actually think that there was there were some important learnings for me to come out of that.
Rose Lucas says one takeaway from that experience was a sharpened sense of her connection to others, particularly through caring healthcare workers.
There's a line in one of the poems that, you know, says, you know, in response to a nurse helping me get to the toilet, you know, we go from, you know, commode, you know, to, you know, being helped, you know, while he's walking backwards, leading me to the toilet, you know, and then ultimately I could do it on my own as the marker of success. But, you know, in that very prosaic process, the actual kindness of one person to another. And I think there's a line that says, kindness, I see, is the bedrock of everything. And yeah, I think that is a really, boy, I mean, maybe we need these slightly shocking, somewhat shocking experiences to wake us up to that. But it is actually true. You know, we are all only people together. And, you know, if someone puts out their hand and helps, you know, then that's, you know, I experienced that as a really profound sort of recognition of that interconnection. Mm. Yeah, it's very humbling.
Here we spent a few minutes singing the praises of nurses.
I was just thinking in one of the poems, I described them as the good people. You know, the protracted fluorescent glare of the hospital, unblinking, it guides the good people as they work, doing their best. You know, and of course, on one level, that just means, you know, they are good people, you know, because they're helping and they're supporting, etc., in that sort of moral sense of good. But I think I also had a bit of an echo in there of the fairy folk, you know, that sort of sense of, and especially when you're kind of groggy and half out of it in hospital, more than half out of it, you know, that it's almost a kind of, you know, otherworldly experience in some senses.
In the title poem of Increments of the Everyday, Rose Lucas reflects on how unforeseen eventuations make one more aware of one's place in the world.
Increments of the Everyday. The injured body is an almost blank canvas. A synesthesia of migrating pain. White on white of starched sheets, and my hospital gown swings open at the back. I don't care or notice. It isn't what concerns any of us gathered in this sealed space. To imagine raising my body from its always interim position, having hoped that it might remain somehow unnoticed below a watermark of passing attention. The myriad commands and componentry involved in movement of any kind. Onto my side, inhaling as deeply as possible, to cough or try to, beginning the excruciating process of levering myself out of the bed towards tablets, commode, an unappetizing bowl of jelly. Slowly and holding on, raising my knees at the bench, one knee, the other knee. Repeat. Inching my way toward the toilet, grasping the hands of the nurse while he leads me, carefully, stepping backwards. Kindness, I suddenly see, is the bedrock of everything. Finding my way to the mysterious other end of the corridor, where unknown patients lie, each encased in a privacy of pain and enduring, not meeting my eye. Holding the rail and retracing my steps to this rocky island, my allocated, uncomforting bed. In my other life, I suspect these small increments wouldn't register, obscured in the rush. But here, I count them clearly, grateful for every small advance, every click of synergy. In the intensified hiatus of this time, neither unanchored in darkness, nor yet returned to a life where we are blinkered to the existence of this precipice, the sheer uncertainty of our footing. I am travelling every step of this torch-lit path, attuned, attenuated. I am learning to walk in a way I have not walked before.
Our guest today on Poetry on the Radio has been Melbourne-based poet Rose Lucas. Next week, we speak with Canberra poet Natalie Cook. I'm Kimberly K. Williams.
The Rhyming Bugle. At Smith's Alternative in Civic on November 27, that poetry thing presents a big open mic. The University of Canberra Centre for Creative and Cultural Research is offering two poetry workshops soon. On Tuesday, November 28, Oz Hardwick will lead a two-hour workshop on poetry collaboration. Who said that? Collaborative writing. In the workshop, Hardwick will use an array of visual stimuli, both images and texts, to explore how fragments and brief encounters can stimulate collaborative work in voices which may not be one's own. Search online for University of Canberra Oz O-Z Hardwick Workshop. Then on Saturday, December 2 at the University of Canberra, Poetic Movements will hold a workshop, Visual Poetry 101, with poetry book illustrator Karen Florence. The half-day poetry workshop is for people who'd like to experiment with ways to present poetry visually, with such methods and media as collage, stamping, redaction, typewriting, and pens and paints. Search online for University of Canberra Visual Poetry 101. Applications are open for the Helen Ann Bell Poetry Bequest Award for Female Poets. The Bell Award offers $40,000 to the author of a collection of between 50 and 80 pages. Entries close on Monday, December 18. Search online for University of Sydney Helen Ann Bell Poetry Bequest Award. Poetry on the Radio is produced weekly on unceded traditional land in the studios of ArtSound FM and airs Sundays at 4:30 p.m. and again at 10:30 p.m. on Mondays and online at artsound.fm. Series hosts are Kimberly K. Williams and Peter Searles, who produced the program with me, Peter Monahan. Our theme is an imagining of an ancient Greek hymn to the muse Calliope by Gregoria Paniagua and the Atrium Musica de Madrid.